This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Our next guest, Dane Brugler, has unleashed the beast.
He is the Athletic's NFL draft analyst. He just released the beast.
Dane Brugler from the Athletic, the beast himself.
Release the Kraken.
With the 10th pick,
the Chicago Bears select.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Oh, no. I really hope that the Bears do not select the Score Midday Show. My 40 time is terrible.
I don't know that I can. Oh, I definitely can't run a 40 right now. So there's that.
I could pretend to jump high and then edit the clip with somebody else.
My vert's only about 20 now.
Let's go to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today and ask Dane Brugler if he were drafted somewhere. Dane, thank you for joining us. What would be your overwhelming combine trait that would get you into an NFL team's draft list?
I would have a hammy injury, so I wouldn't do any testing. But I would interview really well. I have a good idea of what the teams wanted to hear, be prepared. But yeah, that hammy is just, it's rough. So
unfortunate.
No 40 for me, no testing for me. That's all right. Maybe at the pro day. Yeah, we'll keep kicking that can. Yes.
The pro day is always where people shine. He is the man behind the beast, and you just released your entire 7-round mock draft, as I see. I know everybody asks, do you sleep? But you have to some. So in what time were you able to put this together, and how long did it take?
Yeah, once I get the beast out, I treat myself by doing a 7-round mock draft. It's look, for me, it's really a helpful exercise because it's a good preparation for the actual draft. I'm going through, okay, these are the team needs for each team. I'm going over draft trends. Like, this general manager usually likes to target this type of player in round two, or just understanding how to connect all those dots. And so getting a sense of the depth charts around the league, a better sense for the needs and how those have changed and how just certain teams like to draft. doing an exercise like this, while very time intensive, it's really helpful for me. So on draft night, when we're live for every pick, going over every pick, I'm better suited, better prepared to understand why a certain team is thinking the way they do when they made their pick.
Okay, so it's interesting that you say that, because you're obviously going off of the Chicago Bears draft history with Ryan Poles, which is one thing, but then you've got the influx of a new coaching staff with Ben Johnson as the play calling head coach on offense, and then also Dennis Allen and what he likes as far as a defensive coordinator. So walk me through how you got where you ended up, which is number 10, the Bears select tight end Tyler Warren out of Penn State.
Yeah, and I think I had to kind of be convinced of this pairing a little bit. But the more you think about it, I think it makes sense, especially when you bring in Ben Johnson and what Sam Laporta meant for that Detroit offense when they drafted him. And he was kind of like the skeleton key that really unlocked a lot of that offense. And I think when you look at Ben Johnson running a lot of 12 personnel, so getting two tight ends on the field at the same time, Cole Kmet still very much a part of this team, but you're adding another pass catcher that's really going to help your offense. And so someone that can line up in line, he can, you know, you don't have to flex him out, and you can move him around the formation, get really creative with that. So, and it depends who's available for them at 10. One of those offensive linemen, would they be there at 10? Could Ashton Jeanty slip to 10? In this mock draft that I did, Jeanty was off the board, Will Campbell off the board, Armon Membu off the board. And so, sure, I mean, they could absolutely look at defense, a guy like, you know, Derek Harmon, defensive tackle out of Oregon, one of the pass rushers that might be someone that they really like, Mikel Williams, Shamar Stewart, you know, whichever defensive end they like. You could argue that might be a direction they could go as well. But Tyler Warren, I think, makes a lot of sense in terms of just the fit and also someone being worth that pick in this draft.
I'm glad you brought up the concept of this GM likes to go with this, especially in these rounds, because after Shamar Stewart's combine, I thought to myself, that relative athletic score is something that would totally intrigue Ryan Poles. I could see him falling in love with that, especially after the performance he had. Even though Stewart's sack numbers were not good at A&M, he's that type of guy that a team could develop, knowing that he was underdeveloped in college. And I could completely see Ryan Poles going for him. You have him as the 11th pick overall to the 49ers.
Yeah, and there's a lot of differing opinions on Shamar Stewart, and understandably so, because like you said, he is a physical freak. For a guy that's 270 pounds, 6'5", has that type of length, to go out and run a 4.5, to jump 40 inches in the vert. I mean, just ridiculous numbers. And it's like, okay, that's great, but why did he only have 1.5 sacks last year? And there's more context that's needed. Part of it is the way he was used, the way he was lined up. He wasn't asked to just pin his ears back and go on a consistent basis. But then also, like, he led the team in pressures. So he was affecting the pocket. He was making the quarterback move his feet. He just needs to be a better finisher. And once he gets to the backfield, and this is a young player, true junior still, and he didn't really start playing football seriously until he got to high school. So he's still figuring things out. But there's a leap of faith involved when you're talking about a player that's this freaky of an athlete, but the football production maybe doesn't match up. But at the end of the day, the scouting motto for NFL teams, traits over production. They're not going to draft you for what you've done. They want to draft you for what you're going to do. And that's why I think several teams are really intrigued with Shamar Stewart. 10, the Bears, 11, the 49ers, the Falcons at 15. A lot of teams are looking at Stewart as, hey, we might be able to get a guy that's just ascending and scratching the surface of what he can be.
We focus so much on quarterbacks because it is the most important position in the game of football. And it's interesting that you have Cam Ward going number one overall, but then the next quarterback isn't taken in your mock until 21, the Pittsburgh Steelers taking Shedeur Sanders, and then a couple more quarterbacks in the early 30s and Jackson Dart, Jalen Milroe. I'm just curious as to how you put together this QB piece of the puzzle, especially given that so many teams do need either a quarterback or a quarterback of the future.
Right, and last year we had six drafted in the top 12, and so it was very top-heavy. This year, I think teams are looking at the top 10 and saying, especially like the Browns and the Giants, they're looking at it and say, Well, do we love one of these quarterbacks? Maybe not. Maybe we like them, but maybe we don't love them. So let's go with the blue chip non-quarterback here. For the Browns, I think Travis Hunter is the best player in the draft, in my opinion. Makes all the sense in the world. That's the way they should go at two. And then with the Giants, you know, they're doing so much extra homework on these quarterbacks. And so it wouldn't be a surprise if they went that direction at three. But I'd be surprised, just because you have Abdul Carter sitting right there for you. And this is a draft where there's five quarterbacks that we expect to go in the top 40 picks. The Giants could easily trade up from that early second round into the first round to get one. They could stay put at 34, and one could fall to them there. And so I think it just depends on how much do they really love one of these players, one of these quarterbacks. And I would not be surprised if we get to draft night and quarterbacks don't go two or three, and then, okay, the Raiders pass, the Jets pass. The Saints at nine are an intriguing spot with Derek Carr, his 2025 season in doubt with an injury. I think the Saints pass on a quarterback at nine. And, you know, if you're the Bears, that's obviously, I mean, you want to see these quarterbacks go. You have your guy. You want other good players pushed down to you. But I right now, we're a little over a week out. A lot can change. But right now, I'd still be surprised if we saw more than one quarterback go in that top 10.
Yeah, it's just as compelling, Dane, to see your round two in your mock draft as it is the round one. This is Dane Brugler, the man behind the beast, kind enough to join us from The Athletic. You have the Browns taking Jackson Dart, who a lot of people think is going to go in that first round, quarterback-wise. And then the Bears appropriately taking a running back at 39. You think it's going to be Travion Henderson from Ohio State. What was your reasoning for the Bears to go take a back in the second round as opposed to maybe the first? Ashton Gentry's on the mind of a lot of people here. But I think this is just a good idea for the Bears if he's available there.
If Ashton Gentry makes it to 10, I think that's the pick. I think that's, they would be thrilled to get Ashton Gentry there. But can he get past 5 and 6, the Jags and the Raiders? That's kind of where I see him going, somewhere in that mix. But yeah, with the Bears, this is a draft where running back's going to stretch. You don't have to take that guy early and feel like that's the value. You can wait to the second round, especially with those two second round picks, whether that's Travion Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, whichever running back they really like. But Henderson, I think, makes a lot of sense for when you think about what Jahmyr Gibbs was to that Ben Johnson offense in Detroit. Henderson's not Gibbs. I don't want to, you know, kind of paint him as he's that level of player. But stylistically, you can see some of that with the speed, where if you get him in the open field, good luck trying to catch him, because he has the way he accelerates, the way in the open field that he can go and make guys miss and create those explosives, create those big plays. Travion Henderson is a home run waiting to happen. Now, when things get a little bit muddy up front, he, you know, the tempo, the vision, a little bit up and down. But if you lead him to water, he will drink. He will make the defense pay. So Henderson, I think, would make sense for them once we get to the second round. But this is a running back rich draft. They could focus on defensive line in the second round, wait till third, fourth, fifth, and still feel like they're getting a quality running back.
So you're saying they could get a cohabitating starting running back or a 1A, even in the fifth round?
In this draft, yes, because I gave draftable grades to 30 running backs. 30 running backs aren't getting drafted. There's not going to be 30 teams that are going to draft a running back this year. So, you know, there's only so many teams that will draft one in the top 100. So there are going to be good players that are going to be pushed into that fourth round, into day three. So, you know, a guy like RJ Harvey from UCF, who one of a top 10 back in this class, might get pushed to the fourth round. You know, a guy like Jarquez Hunter from Auburn, Cam Scataboo from Arizona State. There are a lot of really good running backs and just not enough spots in the top 100 for them to go. So if the Bears do end up waiting until day three, I think they'll have more than a few options that they'll feel good about at that point in the draft.
Dane, you also have Will Campbell, the offensive tackle from LSU, who we all love, going fourth overall to the Patriots. There's a lot of thought that maybe Ashton Gentry goes to the Patriots. What was your thought by the need for maybe what the Patriots have at the fourth overall pick?
Yeah, I was doing New England radio this morning talking about the possibility of Gentry at four. And, you know, they're definitely split on something like that. They don't see running back as a need. But when you're drafting top five, you draft players, not positions. You know, you go for the impact guy. Who's going to impact your roster the most? And Ashton Gentry, you think about, dropping him into that offense. You want to help your quarterback with a left tackle. I get it. You know what would help your quarterback? A dynamic running back who can catch a ball out of the backfield, can make guys miss. Contact balance is unreal. So Ashton Jeanty should be considered at four. Now, I did go Will Campbell there for them. Just think it's more of a, you know, hit one on the fairway. Let's get the really good offensive lineman. We think he can play left tackle. If, you know, if the length has obviously been a conversation point with him. If he proves that he can't play left tackle, we still feel like we're getting a really good guard. It, regardless, he's going to upgrade our offensive line. And the Patriots do need that in a big way. But I did have Ashton Jeanty going to the very next pick to the Jaguars. You know, I think ETN's in a contract year. New head coach, new general manager. They're not tied to those running backs. You want to help Trevor Lawrence. Ashton Jeanty is going to go pretty quickly in this draft.
That is the voice of Dane Brugler, the NFL draft analyst for The Athletic and the creator of the annual draft guide, The Beast, which we are trying to sort our way through here on Middays at The Score. Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harrison. Dane, going back to the top of this draft, where you have the Browns with the number two overall pick taking Travis Hunter, and you have him ranked as the number one cornerback. I'm curious as to where you have him as a receiver, though, because a lot of people feel like he's going to have a better career as a receiver when all is said and done.
He'd be the number one receiver in this draft, no doubt about it.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, there's definitely debate about where he should play. Like, I think if his upside to me is higher at corner, if he plays corner, he could be a top three corner in the NFL, you know, by the time we get to the end of his rookie contract. He is that good. At receiver, I still think he's very good. He could be a top 10 receiver in the NFL. And so for some teams, they would much rather have the offensive impact that he brings. And I think you look at the Browns especially, they need offense in the worst way. And if they don't believe in a quarterback at two, Travis Hunter, to me, I think they probably draft him as a primarily offensive weapon because that's just what they need. They need that life on offense no matter who's throwing the football. So teams are split. Some teams see him as a corner, some see him on offense. I think theoretically it's easier to see him on defense primarily, and then you mix in 25 plays a game for him on offense where he can get 8 to 10 touches. He's still very much impacting your offensive game plan, but still being a full-time defensive player. To me, that makes the most sense. But I certainly understand a team like the Browns or another team that wants to play him primarily on offense and really focus on that. But like he said, he wants to play both, and the tape says he can do it. Just talking to teams and the interviews, they think that he has what it takes to do both, because it's not just athletically and, you know, the fatigue and all that. It's the mental commitment to know both sides of the ball, the playbook and all of that, what it takes during the week. So if anybody can do it, it's Travis Hunter. And that's why if I'm the Browns at two, I'm not passing on him. He's the best player in the draft.
We are talking to Dane Brugler, as we mentioned, the man behind the beast. And I'm used to a massive PDF. People have talked about printing out the beast, and I think it's like $200 later by the time they get it done. I don't even want to know how many trees. The layout is completely different this year. The page design is really cool. We were talking about the user interface of the beast earlier. I know the quarterback tiers that Mike Sando does that also got a bit of a makeover. Mm-hmm. So what could you tell us about just how to use and utilize the beast the best way ahead of the draft?
Yeah, I'm really proud of all the resources we put behind it. We've got a great team that's, you know, I'm a meat and potatoes guy. I do the work, the scouting, all that. And we have smarter people doing, making it look pretty and really easy to navigate. And that's the biggest thing. Easy to navigate. So when you want to know what a player, something about a player, search bar, type in the player's name, boom, everything's right there. If you want to look by position, there's a scroll down menu for that. But if you also want the PDF, you can do that as well. There is a download link for the PDF. Some people really prefer that version as well. But and that's something I fought for, just to make sure we're satisfying all the customers. But I wanted to really upgrade this so it's mobile friendly. It's easy on your tablet, your computer, whatever. Very proud of the end product. And, you know, just excited where we can take this. Sky's the limit.
Well, I think somebody's going to end up printing out the beast. It's going to happen. We need to find out what the printing cost was. But, Dane, we always appreciate it. Anything else that you have, like, observation-wise, just putting it together this year that you want to share with everybody?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a year where I'll be interested to see how many non-combine players get drafted. That's always something I'm focused on, to see how many, you know, 330 guys get drafted or go to the combine, and how many of those guys that weren't invited end up getting drafted. So interested to find that out. And then, you know, just the quarterbacks. It feels like an exercise of musical chairs where one quarterback's going to go early, and then it's kind of like, wait, what do the Steelers do? What do the Browns do? What do the Giants do? What do the Saints do? And what's the order they come off the board? Shedeur Sanders, I think, is the favorite to be the second quarterback drafted, but that's not set in stone. He could be the third quarterback drafted. It just depends on, because every team looks at these quarterbacks differently. Jackson Dart, Tyler Shuck, a lot of love for Shuck. And then Jalen Milroe, he will be at the draft in Green Bay. And so what does that mean for where he'll be drafted? So the quarterback musical chairs is going to make for some really good TV next week.
We love it. Dane Brugler, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. You have a masterpiece yet again.
Thanks, Dane.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
That was Dane Brugler, the man behind the Beast. Of course, you could access that via The Athletic. And we have a Beast announcement we would like to make, or at least Beast-related. We've had questions for the last several weeks. Are we going to do Who's Your Guy? The answer is yes.
My first time.
It is. And now it's going to be easier for you. You don't have to do the awkward vamp, you know, the wait and fill time and talk while you dial up the PDF and search on the page. This is a much quicker process for us.
I'll take your word for it.
There is no panic like knowing that you haven't quite found the page that you need for your player on the PDF on the Beast.
This sounds like it's going to be a task, though. But I'm ready. I'm up to the challenge.
We had a lot of drops that we acquired over the last year. And it would be a crime against humanity to not combine them with football in some fun way.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, Kendall Gill from Muncie Bowl.
Gill penetrates, leans in. Oh, what a move. Kendall Gill, a beauty.
All stolen by Kendall Gill. They've got a 3-on-1 break, and Gill gets the basket and a foul on Todd Day. Gill inside for the basket with 2.9 seconds left.
Moves to a season low, 90 points. And now we'll play the Hawks Friday night for a chance to get into the NBA playoffs.
He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Kendall Gill, KG, we wish we were talking to you under better circumstances. He is the analyst on the Bulls postgame show on CHSN with Jason Goff. You're on the Midday Show with Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. A little bit nervous. My son just started driving, and we're on Lakeshore Drive right now. So
hold on.
Woo!
Your son is driving right now as you're giving us this interview?
Yeah, and guys are blowing their horns at us and stuff. Stay in the lane, Phoenix.
Phoenix, the super recruit, Mr. Basketball himself, and I'm calling him that because he's Mr. Basketball.
Mr. Basketball, but he's just learning how to drive. So,
oh, I know. I didn't mean the official title. I'm sorry about that. But he is to us. He can do everything, but he's learning how to drive.
Kendall, how long has he been driving?
A couple of weeks.
Okay, well, you're out of the parking lot, so that's good. Because I remember learning to drive in a parking lot.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we worked on it, but I mean, this is his first time really where I let him go, and I'm not saying anything. But, you know, I had to come on with you guys, so I told him to drive. So
this is amazing. And so he's on Lakeshore. Is this his first time driving on Lakeshore?
This is his second or third time driving on Lakeshore, but
he's
driving
a
good distance now, so you know he's getting better.
Okay, good progress. Well, we know if something happens, and I don't want you to freak out, but the Bulls kind of freaked us out last night a little bit. I guess, you know, going back to last year, Kendall, and when they lost in the play-in game, and I was reminded of this, that Jimmy Butler didn't play in that game either. So it's not like you could say, well, they don't have Jimmy Butler. Why do you think things went as poorly as they did last night, and the fact that the Bulls just didn't seem to have that fight on the defensive end of the court?
The Miami Heat came up with a great game plan. What they did was they did not let the Bulls penetrate like they did in the previous three games this season. Wherever Kobe White was, Bam Adebayo was sort of like a spy, like you have on a quarterback. And that's what Bam Adebayo did to him. They didn't let Kobe penetrate. Also, you know, I played for the Miami Heat for one season, and Pat Riley has this formula where if you challenge shots and get a hand up in a shooter's face, they shoot 35%. And you look at the Bulls' percentage last night, 39%. Every one of their shots, they challenged. And, you know, the defense was impeccable for the Miami Heat, and the Bulls, they just would not let the Bulls do what they've done post-All-Star break. So, I mean, you got to give it to the Miami Heat as well. They played a great game.
Now, Kendall, there were so many lessons where I feel like you and I have talked about things that we've seen in this Bulls team or things you would like to have seen more of. There are comments that you have made, you know, on the shows that you guys do during the games. And I feel like it all came to a head yesterday. You know, the Heat were a mirror, and the playoff Heat especially. One of the things that you talk about so much this season was points in the paint. And let's start there when it came to just what the Heat were able to do in the paint. This is something that you have talked about a lot, and for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that the Bulls have done post-All-Star break is they've gotten into the paint. They've scored maybe 60-plus points per game in the paint when they've won. They've also gotten to the free throw line, and they've also something that just did not allow yesterday. Also, the Bulls weren't able to knock down the three-point shot the way that they normally do. And when you give Tyler Hero three free looks at the basket at the beginning of the game, and you let him get started, it's going to be hard to shut his water off. And the Bulls just weren't able to do that. What I would have done after Tyler Hero scored a couple of times going down the paint is I would have trapped the pick and roll. And had I done that, then I think that would have slowed Tyler Hero down and made other players make plays.
What are you left with now, Kendall, after it was a surge, 15-5 to close the season? We pointed out that none of those wins came against good teams that were playing at full strength, except for the Lakers wins. And even in the first Lakers win, the one out there, both Luka and LeBron were coming off injury. Otherwise, you've got no Tyrese Halliburton in that win over the Pacers. You've got no Aaron Gordon, no Joker in that win over the Nuggets. And to me, it seems like we know the Bulls can beat bad teams, but they're not quite ready for the big time. And I don't even know if playing the Heat in a weaker Eastern Conference is the big time. What's your takeaway from where they are now compared to maybe where you thought they were?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, they were down 13 against the Denver Nuggets. And, you know, they were able to walk the Denver Nuggets down and came back when Luka and LeBron came back in L.A. and they were injured. Hey, if you're on the court, that means you're able to play. So, you know, injuries or whatever, I don't count that. So I think that they did beat some decent teams. It's just that they just weren't ready for what they saw last night. I mean, Eric Spoelstra did a great job of making the adjustments that he didn't do all season long. I mean, they beat the Heat three times during the season. So, you know, that's and it was the same team. So it's something to be said for that. And it's just that the thing is that Eric Spoelstra just made the adjustment to them and the Bulls didn't.
What do you think about the use of the Heat zone? I thought their defensive spacing was really effective against the Bulls.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Layla. It was great last night because they did not allow penetration. And every time Kobe White had the basketball defensively, they were in his jock. I mean, you look at Andrew Wiggins, who's 6'8", 6'9". The length really bothered Kobe. And you look at the previous game against the Miami Heat, the same thing happened with Andrew Wiggins. So I knew that possibly could be a problem. And they did a great job of just throwing guys at Kobe White so he didn't become a spark plug like he normally does.
I don't know if you got to hear Arturis Karnišovas earlier today at his season-end press conference, but he talked about basically making it sound like this is going to be the group next year. And, you know, they've been mired in mediocrity for a minute now. Kendall, do major moves need to be made to this team? And if so, what are you looking at?
No, major moves don't need to be made. I mean, you made the major move. You traded Zach. You traded DeMar. Let's not forget Trey Jones, who was integral in the process of this team making a run in the second half of the season, was injured. I think that if you retain him, you got to re-sign, of course, Josh, and you keep all of your cornerstones together with Kobe White and Modest Bucelis, then you have something. What I would hope that the Bulls are in position to do is draft Derek Queen out of Maryland, who's a 6'10" power forward, who, in my opinion, sort of reminds me of Moses Malone when he was younger, with the exception that he can knock down three-point shots and he can really handle the basketball. I think if you add him to the mix of this team, then now you're starting to head in the right direction.
We also heard AK talk about shortening the time of transition and talked about the younger players that he's gotten. You're mentioning some of them as well in discussing who they got from that Kings and San Antonio trade, for example, and how they put this together. When you hear him say that, what do you think that means, just knowing your experience with this team and knowing how this is coming together in a way?
Well, it's coming together. I mean, you see Modest Bucelis, when he got the consistent time, how he was able to put up consistent numbers, how he was able to play well consistently. And the thing is, you got to do that with all your young players. I thought with Zach Collins, when Vucevic was hurt this season, he did a great job at the starting center position because of his ability to rim run, because of his ability to protect the rim, because of his ability to knock down three-point shots. I think that, you know, he has a lot of untapped potential. You know, you look at Julian Phillips, who came around this season, and, you know, they asked him to improve his three-point shooting. He did a great job at that all season long. And, you know, Dalen Terry as well. I thought that they played, that he played really well. So the Bulls are headed in the right direction as far as their development is concerned. They just need a couple more pieces. And I'm telling you, Derek Queen would be a great get for this franchise. If they can do all those things, guys, then the Bulls are going to be in great position for the future.
Joined by Kendall Gill, CHSN Bulls analyst and a 15-year NBA vet. He's in the car right now with his son, Phoenix Gill, who's been driving for a couple of weeks, and we're wishing them a safe journey. I don't know how far
Phoenix.
Y'all are going, but how much more time?
Right, look, we're pulling in the garage now, so I'm okay now.
I'm not going to lie to you, Kendall. Us and also Ray and Robbie, our producers, and the listeners, when we heard the pause because you cut out for a little bit, we were scared something might have happened.
Yeah, he was trying to change lanes and somebody was blowing at him. So, you know, I just had to, you know, pause myself for a second. But we're good now.
Okay.
Changing on Lakeshore Drive.
Glad
yes.
You made it home. Lakeshore Drive is a bit of a test if you haven't had those driving chops tested, I guess.
The cutaway to Phoenix just now. Hey, Phoenix, remember, if millions of people can do it, so can you. You can do things that millions of people cannot do. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So as you're looking at this and you're talking about adding a few pieces, I just have one question. What do you think the Bulls should do with Patrick Williams?
Well, I mean, it's been 5 years. And, you know, he was the fourth pick in the draft. I know that the Bulls franchise expected, you know, more development from Patrick as well as the rest of the city and us as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls were tried to put Patrick into a trade package, because you know that sometimes works. Because I think that Matis Bucelis is the small forward of the future. I think that there is no question about that. And he and Patrick play the same position. So, you know, I don't know whether the front office is happy with Patrick coming off of the bench. It's just all something that we are going to have to wait and see. The thing is that, you know, with Patrick, I mean, he has so much potential. He has so much. You see, you look at his body, he passes the eye test and everything. It's just something that hasn't been there as far as the development. I don't know what it is, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls tried to move on from Patrick.
We were also wondering the same thing about Vooch. I know that's been wondered about for a while. You know, he had a season, especially that first half, you could argue all-star for sure. When we hear AK say he's going to have more financial flexibility in the summer of 2026, I did think, oh, that's Vooch's last year. You know, that's when his contract runs out, is after 2025. Do you think there's a chance that they move him in the offseason?
There's always a chance. I mean, you know, this is the NBA, and you know, there was rumors that Vooch was going to be traded during the trade deadline, you know, and Zach, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Vooch was moved as well, because I think that the Bulls are trying to look at the future with their younger players. It'd be a shame for Vooch to go, but because he's given us a lot of good years. He had a solid year this year, did a great job pre-All-Star break, and then when the Bulls started making their run, he did a great job of assimilating into what the Bulls were trying to do when Josh Giddey was running up and down the court. Kobe White, getting up and down the court. Vooch did a great job of becoming the secondary break option. So it's no question that he can play with this group. Now it's the question on whether the Bulls want the salary cap flexibility like you just mentioned, Layla.
I just wonder, Kendall, if this isn't the time where you should be trying to trade whoever you can trade to get draft capital so that if a star becomes available on another team, whether that be, I'm just wish casting here, a Joker, a Giannis, whoever, they actually have some bullets to swap with somebody else, a way to barter, because right now they don't really have anything that they could trade and be in that superstar conversation like some of these other floundering franchises who have been in lottery situations for a minute have.
No, that's understandable. You can throw Joel Embiid in that mix too. I mean, because there's been rumors that he's his days are numbered in Philly as well. So yeah, I mean, that's why you accumulate assets in this business, so that you can trade for draft capital or acquiring a superstar player. So, you know, and the Bulls have a few of those players that could be thrown into that mix. You know, one in particular that Jason and I talked about yesterday was Ayo Dosunmu, because a lot of teams would be attracted to Ayo because of what he brings to the table. I mean, the guy is a professional, whether he starts or he comes off of the bench, he's productive. He's a big defensive guard that can score. So I'm sure a lot of teams will be attracted to Ayo Dosunmu as well.
Yeah, if I'm a GM for another team, I definitely would be trying to get Ayo. I know he had that injury setback this season. It's a shame because I feel like he was really putting together a nice body of work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he always does. Each and every year he has improved. You know, I thought he was a steal for the Bulls to draft him in the second round. I thought he was a first rounder all day long. And, you know, he's turned out to be what we all thought he was going to be, what he was at Morgan Park High School, what he was at Illinois. And, you know, he just gets better each and every year. So, you know, he's an attractive piece for every team in the league.
Kendall, I have to ask you this. As a 15-year NBA veteran, what is more stressful? Is it playing in the NBA or is it driving with Phoenix Gill on the radio on Lakeshore Drive?
Driving on Lakeshore Drive on the radio.
Listen, when you told us what the situation was, I was like, oh.
Yeah, because he was making a couple moves there that I, you know, that kind of got my attention. But Hey, we're safe and we're safe and sound now. So
I had to ask because I don't know if we're helping you doing the radio interview or if we're hurting you doing this during that.
No, it's cool. I'm glad that, I mean, that was my first time with him driving on Lakeshore Drive, and you know, he handled himself pretty well because normally I'd be giving him some instruction, but instead I was talking to you guys. So he made it home. So yeah, thumbs up.
Relaxing awesome. The situation. Kendall, we appreciate you visiting with us and talking about the Bulls' disappointing season. Thanks,
and congratulations to everything Phoenix has going on. Northwestern's getting a great one. You know that.
All right. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
With the 11th pick in the 2025 WNBA draft, the Chicago Sky select Haley Van Lith, Texas Christian University.
Haley Van Lith knocks down the three-pointer.
Van Lith will take it and hit it. TCU, it's Haley Van Lith to beat the buzzer.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
That was WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert telling you about Haley Van Lith, former LSU teammate of Angel Reese, formerly of TCU, now a part of the Chicago Sky. They also selected Aja Sivka at number 10 overall. So to talk about it, we go to our Score hotline. It is courtesy of Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa app today. Carly Bell, the host of Courtside KB, she is joining us now. The WNBA guru that is Carly Bell. Carly, I appreciate you coming on with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I just love talking hoops with anybody and everybody. So I'm just ready to just jump right into it.
And if
pun
you,
intended.
We love it. If you want, you can see Carly as well. She joins us on Twitch. It is twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score.
Carly, looking at this draft last night, I know there's a lot of people who were hoping Haley Van Lith would fall to where the Sky were picking, and then they had two picks, that she would be the pick. Tell me what you think about this matchup and how she will fit in with the current Sky roster.
In all honesty, when I was looking at mock drafts back in December, January, Haley Van Lith wasn't even projected a first round pick, but what she was able to do in that NCAA women's tournament just catapulted and bolstered her draft capital tenfold. What I'm really excited about is she already has that chemistry with Angel Reese, which is going to save a brand new head coach in Tyler Marsh months and months of work. You don't have to teach Haley Van Lith, this is how Angel wants the ball, this is how Camilla wants the ball, this is how everybody else wants the ball. They already have that there. That chemistry is already built. And on top of that, having Angel there is going to provide Haley Van Lith with a familiar face, joining into a brand new league as a pro. She has someone that she can lean on in off the court synergy. But on the court, we've seen Angel be a phenomenal teammate, both in the WNBA and in Unrivaled. And I think she's going to be, I don't want to say catalyst is the right word, but I feel supporter is a better word for Haley Van Lith on the court. She can really teach Haley where Michaela likes the ball, where Camilla likes the ball, and how this development is going to work. Obviously, we don't know what this offensive scheme is going to look like under Tyler Marsh. You know, training camp's not for another week, but I really think this was a steal of the draft. I saw her going at number 6, number 7, and the fact that she was available at number 11 in a last-minute trade that Jeff Pagliacco was able to facilitate the day before the draft to get that number 11 pick was astonishing. And both Pagliacco and Marsh said after the draft yesterday that they were just as surprised as everybody else that Haley Van Lith was available at 11. So one, you're bringing in star power. So I don't expect to see a single empty seat at Wintrust. You have Camilla Cardoso's brand. You have the Angel Reese brand. And now you're bringing in Haley Van Lith. Those ticket sales are going to skyrocket. And then I'm just really intrigued to see what this offensive scheme is going to look like. Obviously, it's going to be a focus on three-point shooting because the Sky really lacked that last year. Haley Van Lith does bring that. But her on-ball defense and what she's able to do defensively is something I don't think she gets enough credit for. And that is going to translate really, really, really well to the WNBA.
We're talking to Carly Bell. She is the host of Courtside with Carly Bell. New episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts. And Carly, that was one of the points that I think really attracts a lot of casual fans, you know, women's basketball fans. Maybe they watched women's NCAA basketball, and these are familiar names to them. And I'm not saying that the sky is necessarily drafting based on clout. I don't think that's it at all. These are some of the stars of the game that we've talked about in the college game over the last several years, in people like Angel Reese, Haley Van Lith, Camila Cardoso. So to be able to put that team together, I think this is going to attract a lot of interest for the sky that was already there, because people are familiar with who she is in Haley Van Lith.
I think it's one of the, not just a basketball move, you know, we can talk everything about what she brings on the court, but from a marketing standpoint, just gift after gift after gift to the Chicago Sky. Getting Angel Reese last year, I was on press row in 2022 and 2023. Obviously in 2022, you have Candace Parker. Those seats were there. Seats were filled for the Chicago legend and the greatest basketball, in my opinion, the greatest women's basketball player of all time in CP3. But in 23, Wintrust was a lot emptier than what we saw in 22. Then you bring in a name like Angel Reese. Wintrust was packed every single game. Even when the Sky were on a losing streak, when they couldn't string things together, people wanted to see Angel. She brings people out, not just with how she plays the game, but that swag and that personality that she has on the court is something that we've really missed in basketball. Myself personally, I love to see the too little. I love to see the flex on and put the goggles on, like get fun with it. And Haley Van Lith brings that same energy. And pair her with Courtney Vandersloot, who's coming back in what I think will be her last year in the WNBA. She's getting up there in age. Those knees can only go for so long. And she's a record holder for the Sky, hometown name, favorite of a lot of Sky fans. Haley Van Lith is going to learn from one of the best floor generals in the WNBA. So she's really going to have a phenomenal developmental rookie season. Is she going to start? Probably not, because you have a Courtney Vandersloot. But what she will be able to bring off the bench and how I'm really intrigued to see how the minutes are going to be distributed to her because you have Courtney Vandersloot. But it's just going to be a huge developmental year. And if you're not excited about this pick, regardless of if you know basketball or you don't, you're foolish, because this was a phenomenal pick, not only for the Sky, but for the city of Chicago. I really believe her style of play, her swag, her attitude, everything, how she carries herself, is really going to translate to Chicagoans. Chicago's the mecca of basketball, especially in the women's space. Some of the top tier players have come out of Chicago. Jewel Lloyd, Devereaux Peters, Trish Listing, Candace Parker. These have all played at a very, very, very high level. So you're going to see people in Chicago that know hoops come in and be like, oh, this is the swag that we would see on asphalt ball. This is the swag we'd see in an alleyway. This is the swag that you would see at the Nike tournament that always comes into Chicago at the end of July. That's the type of attitude that she's going to bring to this team. And if you're not excited, you're a fool. If you are excited, then join the club, because I'm just hype about this pick.
Not excited, you're a fool. That is great. Carly, we have run out of time, but if people want to hear more about this, when is the next episode of your podcast coming out to kind of break down the WNBA draft? And then also, you know, Ashish Sivka, I think, is somebody to really discuss in the future as well.
Oh, yeah. She's a great international pickup. You know, prioritization rule on whether or not she does play will play a factor, but I think she'll come over this year. But yeah, new episode actually just dropped this morning. So go ahead and tune in. Lovely 35 minutes of my co-host and I, Derek Jensen, talking all things WNBA. We talk about all the picks, also focus on the Sky, and then who we thought were the winners of the draft. And obviously, I love way too early predictions. So who we think is a way too early WNBA champion. And right now, There's a couple teams in there, but I'm going to say this right now. Sky are going to be a playoff contender if they stay healthy.
Oh, that is good news for sure. Carly, we'd love to have you back on once the training camp begins. Carly Bell, the host of Courtside with Carly Bell. We love to talk hoops with her. Thanks for joining us on the Midday Show on The Score.
Thanks, Carly.
Thank you.
That was Carly Bell. We've got to have her back on.
Yeah. They should be a playoff contender. There's, 13 teams now? 14 teams? I lose track.
Yeah, we got an expansion team.
Yeah. The Golden State Valkyries.
Yeah. That's okay. Where Nisa Morrow went.
Yeah.
Formerly of DePaul.
We'll keep up with her. Simeon, stand up.
Absolutely. More on The Score Midday Show. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi coming up next. Billy Donovan had a chat with The Morning Show, Mully and Haw, Dan Weider in for David Haw, and he had a lot to say. I think he gave us a clue to how he views player development, which makes a lot of sense as to what you've seen out of the Bulls the last month. And then also how he views the season as they get ready for the play-in game. Don't forget, we're giving away Bulls tickets as well later in the show. That's all next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
We've been watching Caleb Williams during the break. He told us he is healthy but fatigued. The kind of year that it's been, and he got that big hit, was kind of laying down over on the bench for a moment, but able to sit right back up.
This is the time of year when college seasons are ending, so they are long years, and when you're having the year that they're having, they're that much longer.
The fact that I've gone through a year, the fact, you know, that I had ups and downs, and you know, we stayed strong and I stayed strong, and I think that's the difference to it so far for me and the feeling for me. And then obviously, you know what Ben has been able to do brings some excitement for me. So, you know, those have been the two main things of, you know, I've had a year under my belt now of ups and downs and good and bad and things like that. And then, you know, the excitement of Ben being here and his creativity and all these different things.
We were talking earlier on how it's really great that the Bears have a very cool quarterback. And he plays outside of just being the Bears quarterback, that he can move in spaces that we're not used to seeing a Bears quarterback move. And there's a great illustration of that inside of Esquire magazine. Brian O'Keefe, executive editor of Esquire, you look at the stories that Brian has done over the years and the people that he's talked to, and you go, huh, why was Caleb a choice to spotlight? Shane found Brian O'Keefe, and now he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Brian, thanks for joining us. Let me start there. What was it about Caleb Williams that you said, you know, he is worthy of a deeper dive and a profile?
Yeah, great to be with you guys, first of all. And well, we found Caleb interesting for a number of reasons. You know, first of all, we are at Esquire. We're obviously writing about men in America, men of all different kinds. We were going to do a big sports package, the Mavericks of Sports, and we were looking for the right cover subject for that. And to me, Caleb was interesting for a few different reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, a guy who has had incredible success, Heisman Trophy winner, number one pick, came into the NFL and kind of, you know, had a up and down first year. So this sort of the jury is out on him. He's got to prove himself. But also all the off the field stuff he does, you know, the interest he has, he's kind of a different kind of character from an NFL quarterback, very confident. You know, the confidence to launch an investment firm before he's even played his first snap in the NFL, the confidence to paint his nails and show himself, show his real personality. So all that came together. And I think there is a tension, you know, especially for Bears fans to see what's really going to happen with him on the field and with the team. And I think all that together, you know, just really makes him a really compelling character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at some of the most recent covers of athletes chosen. It's the big guys. Mm-hmm. It's Paul Skeens. It's Donovan Mitchell.
It's LeBron.
It's Dan Hurley. You know, Lindsey Vonn. These are people who are, I'm not going to say they're bigger than the game, but they're big. They're bigger They have a presence outside of the game. They're more than just the game. Maybe that's what I'm searching for. And I brought up this point earlier that I think it does matter to have a cool quarterback. I think it does. It's the Bears haven't had a guy that Esquire magazine would even consider since Jim McMahon 40 years ago. And I think while at the end of the day, what he does or doesn't do on the football field is going to write the story for him in terms of his Bears career, that the story of Caleb Williams is being told outside of Chicago. And I think that plays into why you chose him and the things you just alluded to. But when you go to pick a subject to write about or spend time about or travel to Europe with, that story to being told outside of the city, I feel like matters almost more than the people who are fans of Caleb Williams in the city he plays in.
Yeah, well, that's interesting that I'm sure a lot of Bears fans would say they mostly care what he does on the field. But, you know, looking at him as a character and somebody that we were interested in and somebody who's going to be the face of a franchise, I think the stuff that you're alluding to is all part of the picture. I mean, just the fact that we went to Copenhagen to photograph him, for me to interview him. You know, he was living in Copenhagen for part of the offseason because his girlfriend lives in Copenhagen, but also, you know, he's a guy who's very interested in European culture, in fashion, in food, you know, in different perspectives around the world. He's not somebody who's just, you know, he does live and breathe football and has been since he was a kid, but that's not all he lives and breathes. You know, he's also really interested in all kinds of subjects, in business. And I think, you know, if he can pull that off, if he can be successful as an investor and a business person off the field, while at the same time leading the franchise and being a top NFL quarterback, that will be an incredible story.
Brian O'Keefe, the executive editor of Esquire, joins us here on The Score to talk about the brilliant piece on Caleb Williams in Esquire. You need to check it out, find it online, go pick up the magazine itself with Caleb. He also looks great.
Yeah.
And the photographs are amazing. The clothes are outstanding. When you sat down with him, Brian, what struck you as unique about him?
Well, you know, he has a quiet confidence about him. I definitely felt that when I was sitting with him and talking. He's kind of low-key unless, you know, something stirs his competitive juices a little bit. And then you can see the competitor. Anytime, you know, he talked about a game situation or we did a video sit-down where there was like a quiz involved and you could see him like getting competitive. But I just think like the breadth of his interest to be such a young guy. And this is another reason that we were really interested in Caleb is he was really in that first generation of athletes, college football players in particular, who benefited from the NIL change in college football. And he was able to earn millions of dollars in endorsements as a college player. He was essentially a professional player for his last, you know, couple of years in college. And I think that, you know, these guys who are coming out now, they've had a different experience in terms of dealing with business people, getting paid large amounts of money. So they can come into the league with a more sophisticated sort of appreciation for what's available to them off the field, as opposed to just trying to grind and, you know, impress the coaches.
Considering your background, being the editor-in-chief of Fortune, what's it like for you now to talk with athletes, whether and it doesn't have to just be Caleb, although you're right about where college athletics is going and how it changes things, but what's it like for you now to talk with athletes and understand that it's about the brand that they are as well as the player that they are?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's tough to imagine being that age and being able to have the discipline to do everything, you know, playing quarterback in the NFL. And this is another reason I was really interested in doing this story myself and writing about Caleb. Basically, half the teams in the NFL are always looking for a quarterback. There's only about a third of the teams in the NFL, maybe slightly more, who feel really good about their quarterback situation at any given time. You know, so there's really only about like maybe 12 to 14 guys on planet Earth at any one given time who the league would look and say, yeah, that guy is definitely a winning quarterback in the NFL. So, you know, it's really tough to be that guy. You can be an incredible athlete, have an incredible arm, you look like an All-American, and you still can't make it in the NFL. It's just such an elite set of talents. So somebody trying to do that and have the confidence to deal with serious business people and have the discipline to try to like maintain, you know, their business matters over here and their football matters over here and do it all at a high level. I mean, it's just an unbelievable, you know, real task for anybody.
I spent the bulk of my television career storytelling and doing documentaries and trying to basically, you know, travel and tell humanize people in a way that most of the time they are put on a pedestal for because they're larger than life, whether it's the money that puts them there, what they're doing for a living, et cetera. Very few times do we actually get a peek behind the curtain. The preparation that goes into an interview like this, I know, is long and arduous, and you're trying to pick up every rock to make sure no stone goes unturned, but you always find out a new nugget, no matter what. And I'm sure you've had this happen 1,000 times in your career. What is something about Caleb Williams that you learned that really struck you in a way that you're like, man, this guy, if this all checks out, like Chicago and the Bears are going to have something?
Well, I mean, you know, to go back to what we said before, the fact that he was spending time in Copenhagen, lurking around in coffee shops and studying football on his iPad, that was surprising to start with. You know, talking to some of his coaches and teammates from the past, like talking to the strength coach at USC, who was the strength coach at Oklahoma when he got there, and then, you know, they all moved to USC together. You know, that was really interesting too, because before Caleb became the starter, he developed this routine with Benny Wiley, the strength coach, of like doing a full workout on game days in the morning. And that was his way of staying intense and staying ready. And we're talking about a guy, you know, who was a true freshman coming in, and he didn't waste much time before he got his way onto the field. But I think also, you know, that goes back to him when he was like 10 years old, telling his dad he wants to be the best quarterback in the world, and his dad saying, okay, I'm taking you at your word, and we're going to develop the plan to do that. And, you know, basically Caleb was doing two-a-days when he was 11, 12, 13 years old, getting up at 5:30 in the morning, going and doing a workout, going to school, and then going back and doing another workout, and his dad held him to that. You know, there's a famous example of that kind of thing from the past. Todd Marinovich, for the old school folks who remember him.
Yeah, the buttermilk on the calves and all that stuff. It was crazy.
There was a famous Esquire article about him and how he didn't work out. I mean, he was great for a while, but like, you know, he wasn't able to maintain any balance in his life. And Caleb had a version of that experience and is still, he's this, you know, seemingly super well-adjusted, confident guy who's talking to me about playing 19 more years in the NFL and not setting any caps on his goals for what he wants to achieve, and still at the same time being a business guy. Like, that is really, that's an interesting guy. You know, that doesn't mean he's going to succeed in the NFL at the highest level, but somebody who can be that measured and well-rounded in what they're doing is, you know, that's unusual.
He opened up to you, and he's been pretty transparent with us here in Chicago. I don't have any complaints, but him opening up to how much it hurt. Like, we knew it hurt when they lost that Washington game, but him opening up to you about how much it hurt and how it impacted him, what did you take away from him telling you about how he tried to rebuild himself after that?
Yeah, that was a really interesting moment in our conversation. I mean, you know, he's a guy who's gotten some attention for letting his emotions show and gotten some criticism probably in some corners. There's some people, you know, he had a game in college where he cried and after they lost, and some people were criticizing him for that. But he's confident in who he is. And, you know, I think that goes back to just his burning desire to win. I think that, you know, if he wasn't able to deliver a win for his team and for himself and for the fans, that's going to cut to his core. But he also, you know, any rookie coming into the NFL, being a starting quarterback right away, that's an incredible challenge. And I do think, like, all the losing, you know, as he said, like, he's never lost that much. And that wore down on him. And he did say, you know, I cried some tears. I went home and I was just beaten down physically, mentally, you know, losing a bunch of games. One detail that he told me that didn't end up in the story was he drew some inspiration in that moment from Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant is one of his heroes. And he was thinking about the moment in Kobe's career when Kobe, you know, was asked if he had hit a wall. And he said, no, but it doesn't matter if I did. So what if I did? You know, and that was kind of like the mindset that Caleb wanted to have. It doesn't matter if I'm worn down. And he definitely felt like he rallied and the team rallied a little bit at the end of the season. And of course, they ended, you know, with the win over Green Bay, which was a way to go out on a high note.
A Kobe comp for Caleb Williams is it's special. And I might be asking an unfair question here, and I know that. But after what you just experienced and wrote about and gave us a real true profile look behind the curtain of Caleb Williams after year one with the Bears, if I said it's 2035 and we are looking at Caleb Williams and we're doing it based off of your just one trip with him and your get to know you feature, what do you think his Bears career looks like?
That is a tough question. It's really hard to go out on a limb because, you know, I mean, I cited some statistics in the story about the number of quarterbacks, the percentage of quarterbacks that actually make it, even first round draft pick quarterbacks who actually become playoff winning quarterbacks. I will say, you know, I mean, he obviously has the athletic ability. He's shown it at every level until now. You talk to him. I talked to DJ Moore. He had a lot of confidence in him. You know, Lincoln Riley has obviously a lot of confidence in him, having coached him at USC. And I see a lot of determination there. He's got the ability. It's just very hard to, you know, predict anything with any kind of degree of accuracy. I think, you know, he's going to be really committed to it. Despite these other things he's got going on off the field, like he definitely comes across as a competitor. I just, you know, if you look even a year before, Bryce Young was drafted number one and the Panthers put him behind a terrible offensive line and he looked like a terrible quarterback. And CJ Stroud looked like the guy, you know, he led his team to the playoffs as a rookie. And then Caleb's year, you know, the Bears were obviously better than the Panthers, but they didn't have a great offensive line. It's tough to look good behind behind a bad offensive line. And Jaden Daniels looked like the guy. So these things can change really quickly. I think that Caleb has every opportunity and the ability, though, to, when you're looking back at it 10 years from now, to be a guy who led the Bears to the playoffs a few times. And, you know, who knows?
Brian, it's a brilliant piece. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. And honestly, if you ever do another sports profile and you just want people to know about it, don't hesitate to hit us up because your work is fantastic.
Thanks so much. It's great to talk with you guys.
That is Brian O'Keefe of Esquire.
Really good stuff.
Go read the Caleb Williams feature that he did. It is quite good, and you'll find out a lot more about your quarterback. Got a little bit of breaking news that will interest Cubs fans. Breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. This from Taylor McGregor. The Cubs made some roster moves today. Matt Shaw optioned to AAA Iowa. Vidal Bruhan had been reinstated from the 10-day IL. Eli Morgan placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow impingement. Luke Little recalled from AAA. Daniel Palencia recalled from AAA. Nate Pearson optioned. There's a lot of stuff there. And I think Matt Shaw needs to go work on that leg kick.
Yep.
Because not getting around on stuff and very susceptible to pitches inside and high.
Hey, you talk about patience and impatience, some of the that we've heard about the bullpen. This is the Cubs they're not wasting time. Not wasting time.
We'll be back and land the plane next here on The Score.
Manager number 11, Craig Counsell.
Craig Counsell.
Craig, why'd you change your jersey number?
I don't know if you're aware of this, but we traded for Kyle Tucker.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Cool night last night. Did a great tribute to Ricky Henderson. My dad worked for the Milwaukee Brewers growing up, and the night Ricky Henderson broke the single season stolen base record was in Milwaukee.
There he goes! And the throw down and the
a standing ovation for Ricky Henderson.
My dad's job was to drive Ricky in a golf cart to the press conference that night. And so I popped on the back with Ricky Henderson after he broke the record. He was super nice. Because of that, I was a huge Ricky Henderson fan. I wore a t-shirt all through my childhood days. I can still see the t-shirt about him breaking that record.
Luke Brock was a symbol of great base stealing. But today, I'm the greatest of all time. Thank you.
If you can talk like in the third person about yourself and it sounds cool and genuine, then you're something else.
Tenure. Ricky Henderson used to always say, I don't have tenure, I got 15 years.
That's even better than tenure, right? That's real tenure.
Craig Counsell with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love our opportunities to have a chat with the manager of the Chicago Cubs, Craig Counsell. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Spiegs is off today. Ryan McGuffey is here in the building with me today as we talk with Craig Counsell. Craig, it's Jackie Robinson Day. Everyone gets to wear 42. What does it mean for you to put that jersey on?
Yeah, well, what's cool is that just kind of in the clubhouse today, as players get to the field, we're all talking about Jackie Robinson, actually, and his career and kind of his journey and what he's meant to the game. So it produces like just great conversation, I think. But we're all fans and we're all, in kind of awe at what his journey of life. It was a hard life, special life, and a life well lived.
Craig, I asked Nico Horner this earlier, and I want to get your perspective as a manager and a guy who played in the big leagues for a long time. Did you have an experience? I mean, there's been so much talk about the schedule and the opponents and the difficulty. I think 50 and 33 is the combined record of the teams that you've played. You play in front of 47,000 on a Monday last night in San Diego, the third largest crowd ever at Petco Park. You had 50-plus thousand over the weekend at Dodger Stadium. You guys are not strangers to playing in front of big crowds, but at this early portion of the schedule, did you ever have experience to be thrust into these type of games and atmospheres right away? And how can that benefit you guys as a club out of the gate? Obviously, off to an 11-8 first place start, but how can that benefit you guys when the schedule does take a dip?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I remember a season where you played teams that had these kind of records to start the season. That's hard to say. I mean, all this is this, you play who's in front of you, man, and then there's nothing to like complain about, or it's just the way it is. And the season kind of ebbs and flows, and you catch a team with some injuries, or you don't catch their best starting pitcher, and you can't control any of that. You got to play the night in front of you, and play a good game. And I think we've proven we can play good baseball and beat these teams. It's just, the standard is a little higher when you play against teams like this. They punish you for any kind of mistake, and last night was a pretty good example of that. Friday night in LA, you make one kind of pitching mistake the whole night. Really, Matt Boyd pitched beautifully. He makes one pitching mistake, and they've got a great pitcher on the mound, and you lose a game. So that's just what playing against the best teams kind of forces you to do and makes you perform like.
Craig, what's the strategy? Do you even talk to the team after you get the news on Justin Steele? And how do you want to work with the person? Like, it's one thing to talk about what the team goals are, but all of us feel horrible for Justin Steele. So what becomes your role in discussing how he's going to work through this again?
Well, I mean, it's not something you discuss with the team. I think we've talked to Justin all over the road trip several times, and supporting his decision, really. That's as much as you can do right now. And he's got to make a decision that makes sense for him at this point. And he wants to pitch. You know, he always wants to pitch. He makes that very clear. But it's the right decision. It's what he has to do at this point. So, and that's just it. And then in sports, you learn that as a team, you got to figure out the next guy. It's the next guy's turn. And we already got a really good performance from Colin Ray. And it's going to be his turn to step up. And somebody obviously is going to get a chance in the bullpen, and players around him just got to step up.
Yeah, in the life of fantasy GM, everyone's already trying to replace Justin Steele with some pitcher who's on another team. And I'm sitting there going, wait, it's April 15th, okay? Who is trading anyone on April 15th? Look at history. That's not how it works. I look at the Cubs as in a position of strength. When you look at your AAA rotation, you have three guys down there. When Javier Assad, comes back and is healthy, you have three guys there that have not only pitched in the majors, but pitched and won in the majors. And that's what it takes. It's going to take 8, 9, 10, 11 pitchers deep. I mean, if you look at the Dodgers last year who won the World Series, they had two guys throw 100 innings all season long, and neither pitched in the postseason. This is not foreign that teams like the Cubs have a setback at this point in the season. There's just not a lot of teams that have the type of depth you guys have in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, to your first point, like, trades are not made at this time of year. Yeah. Depth is like there. I mean, there are trades made, but they're not going to be the big trades. That's just not what happens at this time of year. And so this is why you build depth in the off season, is because things like this happen and you can't be surprised by them. You they're going to happen. So we feel like we're well equipped, and it is a next man up strategy. But we feel like we've got that group kind of lined up and preparing, and we'll go from there.
So ordinarily Spiegs is here, the Spiegel guy is here, and we spend a lot of time talking about PCA. And we're in different camps on PCA, and I'm sure the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. I feel strongly about swinging the bat, and that he's not, I don't look at him as like a slap hitter. I look at him as a guy that's got potential, like he's shown over the past couple of games, to give you extra base hits. Spiegs has said, look, he's super fast. He can use the bunt as a weapon. As he develops as a player, what are those conversations between you and him like when it's trying to figure out how he's going to forge his identity as a hitter?
Yeah, I mean, like, hitting is about getting good pitches, swinging at good pitches. It's not about where you hit the ball. Like, it's about swinging at good pitches. And we don't control where the ball is going to be hit. Maybe there's like four guys in the world that can control where the ball gets hit all the time, right? So it's about getting a good pitch to hit and hitting it hard. That's what Pete needs to do. And where the ball goes, I want it to go over the fence. Like, who doesn't? That helps in baseball, right? So, it's better if it goes to the outfield. Hit it hard, send it to the outfield. And that's as much as Pete can do. And just focus on that. I think his swing decisions, in general are improving. That's what's developing. And then where that takes his offense, I think for most players, like, power is something that develops over their career. And by power, I just mean, like, you just kind of like start to get better at hitting the mistakes. And as Pete goes on, he's a very young player still. He'll get better at doing that, and the power will just kind of gradually increase.
When you look at, like, bullpen volatility, I mean, that's not a foreign term to the game. It's been here long before you ever put on a uniform, and we've been here on this earth. But I want to ask you, as a manager, in your experience, in theory, Yeah, in a perfect situation, you can just say, here are five names, and this is when they're pitching. It's just not that easy. These are human beings we're discussing. How long does it take you as a manager to kind of feel out a bullpen and know who plugs in where? Because I think there's this just general sentiment that once the season starts, everyone just goes out and this guy's the fifth, the sixth, the seventh. If this guy's in trouble, if this guy's not. Other than having a closer, I feel like you need to learn that as the season develops. What is the timeline for that? I'm sure it changes, but what is a realistic timeline as a manager to feel out a bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're there. I think the thing that maybe people forget is that, like, not every guy is available every night because they just can't pitch every day. So, I mean, I think we're in a good place with that. You know, but we've got guys pretty much lined up. I think guys pretty much know what to expect. Now we've had some lack of performance in some areas, and I think that's kind of normal too. You got to find the guys that are getting the job done a little bit, and that might be the area that takes a little bit longer at the start of the season. And we're going to have to keep doing that.
We had Matthew Boyd on last week, and what a breath of fresh air he is. I enjoyed talking to him, Craig, and the fact that he is so into the idea of being a Cub, and that to me is different than I love being a baseball player or I love being in the major leagues. It's clear that he, as much as you guys targeted him, he targeted you. And I don't know if any of that means anything for performance. I just thought it was refreshing to have a guy that was like, no, this is where I wanted to be, and here are the reasons why. What has your experience with him been like so far?
No, Matt's been, he has. I think a breath of fresh air is a great way to put it. He's just got a very positive kind of outlook on everything. And really, in his career, he's been through a lot. I mean, he's been injured a bunch. And I think, you know, our hope was when – like he is ready to be healthy, and this is the time he's going to be healthy. And I think that's got him in a really good place, and really happy to be here, and really kind of content and with where he's kind of at in his career. But he's off to a great start, you know, we're lucky to have him. He's pitching at a really high level right now.
Obviously, we know the importance of catching to the staff and what. You know, that means to the overall performance, but there's been so much talk about Kyle Tucker, and rightfully so, but the offensive production you guys are getting from your catching, whether it's Miguel or Carson, has been nothing short of phenomenal. You have an OPS around 1100. I know that's not sustainable, but how important has the offense been from that position at the bottom of the lineup to turn it back over again?
Yeah, I mean, well, those guys are off. Both guys are off to great starts, and it is impactful. I think when you kind of split the job up, it maybe gets lost a little bit, but both guys are doing a heck of a job. And it's you know, offense from that position just around the league, it's hard to find it. And the fact that we're getting it is a big deal. We got two guys off to a good start. That's really important. So they've been a big reason for our success so far.
I'm legit ignorant to this process, so bear with me on this, Craig. When they mic up one of your players, do you have to approve that, or is that strictly the network and the player?
Yeah, it's the network and the player, yeah.
Okay, because I wonder, like, how do you feel?
I mean, they tell me, yeah.
Don't love it, though.
How do you feel about it?
I'm okay with it. I mean, I think it's the player's choice. I mean, you trust your players, and I trust Nico or whoever wants to do it to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen how. I mean, those situations. I've done it. Yeah, it feels like a love hate relationship. Some people love it, some people hate it, and there's really few that are in between. But into how people watch sporting events or just watch television in general now, Craig. I mean, they have multiple devices, or you're on your phone while you're watching a game. It's a different way to open up the personalities of these players, certainly since you played. And I think most importantly for baseball fans, for young baseball fans to kind of truly figure out, I mean, it's a small sample size. It's when the guys are playing. But if you're catching a 13, 15, 18-year-old kid walking by the TV and he stops for those 90 seconds, 2 minutes, and watches Nico Horner mic'd up, I think it's a way to bring baseball, to open it up, to evolve the game.
Yeah, I think that's the goal, is to always is to do that. That's the point of it, to get kind of players in the moment of competition. It's kind of the it's what people don't like about baseball and love about baseball, is the time between pitches, right? In the great moments, it builds big moments. In the kind of like long moments, it's like the game takes too long. But I think using that space to somehow, like, you know, get players more connected to fans is the goal. Look, this is sports. This is entertainment. Like, we have to be open to that stuff.
What was your earthquake experience like?
Yeah, not great. I was on the 12th floor of a hotel, and I felt like I was surfing in my room.
Wow.
I've been on earthquakes, but always been in earthquakes, but always kind of on the ground. So that was a first for me. And I ran down the stairs needlessly, but just in case.
No, I mean, that's definitely the right thing to do. And it's scary. Like, that was a legitimate, or like, that wasn't just like an aftershock. It was a 5.2. And so if you're in a building, like Speaks and I were talking about it, and I said, that's the type of earthquake that people will at least do checks on the structural integrities of their buildings.
Yeah. I mean, the way I took it is, like, I got my phone and ran. Like, I didn't wait for anything else. I took my phone and left immediately. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, there was nothing else to do but get my phone and get out of the building. But it was, yeah, I mean, it was a real, like, at first you thought somebody was pounding on the door, and then it was like, nope, that's an earthquake. That's real.
Damn. Wow.
Well, we appreciate you bringing us inside of it, yeah, man, and telling us how you felt about it, which is...
It's the humanization of just an incredible... Look, it's the Midwest. You grew up in the Midwest. We know about tornado drills and tornado warnings, not earthquakes. And when you see it, it seems like it's not true, you know?
No, it doesn't seem real. It doesn't feel real. But when you put it in your head and you're like, man... That's a big deal, and that's a little scary. So, yeah, glad I went through it, and glad nobody was harmed or anything like that. Would prefer not to be through it again. Yeah.
Yes, I would prefer that you not have to go through it either. Craig, as always, man, we appreciate the time. No doubt. Thanks so much. Good luck against the Padres tonight.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Thank you.
It's Craig Counsell, the manager of the Cubs.
Yeah,
I'm glad he gave us a real answer on that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad that he wasn't like, oh, it's not a big deal.
Done it before. Yeah,
whatever.
It wasn't.
No, I grabbed my phone and I ran.
Look, Lawrence, like, let's be real. What we've seen, like, we're more, seeing what's happening around the world is more visual than ever before, mm-hmm, right? So when you see what happened in Bangkok and when you see what happened in the Dominican over the weekend,
yes,
that stuff brings you close, makes it feel like it's right next door. And so when something like that happens and those images are fresh in your mind, I appreciate that we're all human beings. Why wouldn't you be terrified? I'd be terrified. So I'm a peek behind the curtain. I mean, there was no wait for what's next or hang on, like, what's the group chat going to say? No, 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 no.
No, I'm out.
Yeah.
So we were at Circa. The show went to Circa. This was that October, November, boys, when we were out there during bear season?
I feel like you've been out there about every 3 weeks.
I remember was that damn Patriots game. That's all I remember.
It was definitely the damn Patriots game. But that Friday night, a fire alarm went off, and I'm sitting there going, okay, how long is the fire alarm going off for? I am on the 55th floor, and the elevators don't work.
Oh.
Because of the fire alarm, right?
You
turn the elevators off. And the fire alarm went on long enough where I was like,
time to move.
Grab your phone
and
let's get up out of here.
And at that point, isn't it just your time? Like, you're in a great place like Circa. If you go, you go.
No, I'd rather at least try.
You have some control here, though, Shane.
Yeah. I'm not on the 55th floor. If I'm trying and I only make it down to 30 and then the place goes down, I would have much rather been up in my room.
Sweating it just the whole day. When's it coming?
Sure. Yeah. You know my theory about you could just jump out of a plane when it's crashing? You just ride down with that top floor as it's crashing and then jump out before it hits the ground.
The beautiful thing is that Spiegs was also on the floor. And ooh, I asked,
I thought you said there's something beautiful about it. Oh,
sounds like a bad time.
I asked him at dinner that night. I said, did you hear it? And he's like, oh, yeah. We just chose not to go. Like him and the wife is like, oh, okay. Well,
why
all right.
I remember this. Shane, do you remember this?
Well, we were at what's Oscars. We were at Oscars when it happened.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
And yeah. So I make it down to the first floor. Like, I got my steps in that day.
Yep.
Make it down to the first floor. And the security guard is like, why did you come out of that door? I was like, well, the fire alarm went off. And he was like, oh, I didn't even hear it. I'm like, what?
Wow.
And then I got to go all the way back up. Luckily, because they're very tight on security at Circa. And so he's like, all right, man, just you can go back in. It's totally fine. I was like, I just came out here with my phone because I thought the hotel was on fire. But it was not.
I like the time, though. It's like, what's the appropriate time to move and having it register? I think that's the right call. I would not pull the Shane Reardon technique.
And just say it's my time.
No. This is a lot of worse places. I didn't say this has been your last moments in that circuit. I think it's top five
argument.
For me.
That's a different argument, whether it's the right place to go.
I mean, you got to weigh the positives here. Like I said, do you want to get stuck in the stairwell with the place on fire, or no. Would you rather be looking at Stadium Swim with the place on fire, knowing that you're probably going to die either way?
Well, I took the choice of, hey, I've got some agency here, and I can maybe save my own life. So I went with that.
Don't be a hero, dude.
You have to be a hero for one, though. You don't have to, you know, I kind of like it. If it requires a little Mission Impossible, do your own stunt, I'm in.
So the good part was it wasn't 55 floors. Like there was like a, you know, like there's a little.
Yeah, there's like no, from like 14 down, it's just.
Right.
It's all of a sudden floor one.
Right. There's a little bit of a break.
Okay.
So at least there was that. But it was a moment where I was like, okay, that's been going on for a minute. That's been going on for, it's time to go. Like that sort of thing.
I would have been screaming, is Mark Wahlberg still here? Where is he? Save us. Save us, Mocky Mock.
Oh, no.
Didn't The Rock have a movie like that, too?
Probably.
I'm sure he did.
No, he did. It was with Alexandra Daddario, I think, and
as his daughter, right?
Yeah.
And Carla Gugino as
I think
his
so.
Wife?
And like she was stuck in a parking structure or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, I know what movie you're talking about. It's a good movie.
It's a takeoff,
though. What's the movie?
Inferno, the Rock Tower beats of the Inferno or something
structure.
Like that. It's one of his terrible movies.
No, I thought it was okay. Alexandra Daddario was in it.
Well, yeah, and Carla Gugino, for those of us of an older...
Skyscraper?
Skyscraper, but it was taken from the Tower of Inferno thing, something or other.
That's, I think it was Moana.
It was not Moana.
Do you guys have a skyscraper?
And I think that wasn't The Rock's character disabled? Wasn't that part of it?
No, I think that's just The Rock.
No. I think that there was, like, he had lost his leg in the war, so he had a prosthetic leg.
I think we are mixing up so many different Rock movies, because I'm looking at the cast for Skyscraper, and it's got no one that you and I are mentioning. It's Neve Campbell.
Campbell. Oh, you're right.
Some guy jumps out of a closet with a mask on, and that's a different Neve Campbell movie.
That's Scream.
What? Oh, no, he's here. He's going to kick Shane's ass. Oh, my God.
Oh my God!
Find what that movie's called now.
Shane, look out!
Oh, Rock!
What do you think the percent Rotten Tomatoes is?
Yes, we are mixing up San Andreas and Skyscraper. But
yes,
but I'm
thinking of San Andreas.
I am almost certain that the character in Skyscraper had a prosthetic leg. I am almost. I will have to look it up, but I am almost certain that that is the case.
God, he's done a lot of films.
He really has, and he's got more in production. He's ready to go.
Ryan's point about the Rotten Tomatoes rating, I saw a meme. It was like the Four Horsemen of I'm not seeing this movie. And it was like Kevin Hart, The Rock, Gal Gadot, and I forgot who the fourth one was.
The Rock loses his left leg below the knee when he and HRT colleague Ben Gillespie encounter a hostage taker with a suicide bomb.
See?
In Skyscraper, yeah.
That's right. All right, we have solved that Rubik's Cube.
Just jump out of the building when it's going down, dude. You'll be fine.
Don't do what
Shane
just said.
That's a different way to see stadium swim, too.
It is. There's a pool down there.
Yeah, hey.
Where's a softer landing than water?
I'll take a chance.
Toss me a frozen Mark when I'm on the way down.
When we come back, we are going to talk with Joe Cowley. We'll find out about the play-in, what he thinks, and whether there's a chance of the Bulls getting a superstar at some point. It's next on The Score.